you remember, where Drona had gone to King Drupada, and he had wanted Drupada to give him the wealth he had promised him when they were young boys. And when Drupada refused, Drona stalked out, but he did not forget. And now, a long time later, Drona feels that the time has come for him to be able to go back to Drupada, not as a beggar, but as a conqueror. So anyway, there's a principle called Guru Dakshina. Guru Dakshina is what you owe the Guru for what the Guru has given to you. It's the payment that you have to offer the Guru. And so Drona has been the Guru in the art of warfare to both the Kauravas, Duryodhana and his brother, and the Pandavas, Yudhisthira and all of the five Pandavas. And now Drona realizes that he has trained these young soldiers to such an extent that they have the power to be his instrument, to go back to this man who has insulted him so profoundly and right the wrong that Drona feels that has been done to him. Now, remember, Drona represents the power of past habits, of samskars, and Drupada represents a disinclination, a spiritual aspiration, a disinclination for material things. And they start out as friends, as we find in our lives, but then the power of past habit tries to interrupt your spiritual life, and Drona had rejected him, and that's the symbolic story here. But the symbolism is not so important, it was just a part of it. Okay. So, yes. I'm sorry. Drona is the teacher of archery. He's not related to anyone. He's just himself. He's the one who came, and Bhishma hired him to train the boys to be great warriors. He's the one who had such an affection for Arjuna, even greater than for his own son, Ashwatthama. And Ashwatthama, his own son, keeps siding with Duryodhana. Drona keeps trying to get him to side with Arjuna. And so finally, when the final battle takes place, Ashwatthama and Drona are fighting, have to fight for the Kauravas. Drona has to fight for the Kauravas because past habits tend to lean toward material desire. But in the story, it's because he's lived in their household all this time and he owes it to them to fight. His heart is with the Pandavas, and he often tells Duryodhana, "You don't have a chance, and I'm only fighting with you because I'm obligated to, not because I really think that you have the righteous cause." Because by that time, samskaras have gotten on the side of spirit, but still they're trapped where they always used to be, and they have to be obliterated by the Pandavas, is how it finally ends up working. Does that help? Okay. So Drona now, as the teacher of all these soldiers, says, "I have an assignment for you, and you have to do it." And of course, they're very eager to do this, because this is going to be their first real battle. And Duryodhana, in his usual self-important manner, says to the Pandavas, "You know, we don't even need you. We can do this all by ourselves." And the Pandavas are just perfectly happy to let him go ahead and try. So the Kauravas, which is Duryodhana and his people, go out into the kingdom of Drupada, and they challenge Drupada, and they say that they're there on behalf of Drona, and they're just going to challenge him. And so, you know, the kings are always ready to defend their honor. That's just the way it always works. So they go out and they do their very best, but Drupada is very, very powerful because he represents the disinclination for material things. And so when material desire assaults him, he has a lot of power against that force. And what happens is that Drupada's forces rout the army of Duryodhana, which, you know, was one of the things that further humiliates Duryodhana. And finally, Arjuna says to Yudhisthira, "We don't even need all five of us, just four of us can go, you can just sit this one out." So Arjuna leads the other three of his brothers, Bhima and Nakula and Sahadev. And Arjuna, being this great warrior with the archery and the arrows, he just creates a shower of arrows that completely overpower Drupada's army, and they just cut right through it. And Drona's instructions are exact. He said, "I do not want Drupada harmed. I want you to capture him, bind him, and bring him to me." So Drupada is amazed to see these warriors, especially Arjuna, coming to him, and he's completely captured and overpowered, and there's nothing his army can do against the army of the Pandavas when they're attacked that way. So they bind up Drupada and they bring him to Drona. Now Drona has been waiting his whole life for this moment, and he said, "I asked you to fulfill your childhood promise to me, and you refused. So now I own you, your life is at my mercy, and all of your possessions I have now conquered. He said, but I don't want everything from you. I just want you to keep the word that you gave to me as a child. He said, so I will give half the kingdom to you, and I will take half of it. And so he gave Drupada everything that was north of a certain line, and Drona took possession of everything that was south of that line. Now, the way Master describes that is that samskaras and past habits own the lower chakras, and spiritual aspiration can own the higher chakras, but the kingdom is divided until we are self-realized. And so this is the story of Drona and Drupada acted out again. Then Drona ordered that Drupada be released, and he embraced him and assumed that, well, now it's all even and now it's all over, not remembering that the anger of a kshatriya lasts for a long time. The anger of a Brahmin, Drona was a Brahmin, just flares up quickly but then goes away. So without a word, Drupada has now been humiliated by Drona, but he's not going to let this challenge go unresponded to. So he goes away and he goes off into the forest. And these epics are wonderful because they're always telling you, you have a problem, you go to the forest and you do austerities. And if you do sufficient austerities, you will please the powers that be in the form of the gods or whatever it may be, and they will appear to you and they will grant you boons. And sort of one of the, there's all these little sub-themes of these stories which I love, which is being granted boons, where you please the divine force, and the divine force will help you. And you observe that good people and bad people can get boons because all of them can activate divine power. It's not just a factor of following certain rules. It's just having that concentration and that determination that the divine force lends its energy. It's pleased by tapasya, regardless of who offers it. And once again, we see sort of the complexity of this story. So Drupada makes a very strong resolution. He has two desires now. The first desire is he recognizes that Drona is a very powerful warrior, made more powerful by the alliances he's formed. But Drupada wants his revenge. And he's determined, he says, he wants to give birth, he wants to have a son. He wants to have a son with enough power to be able to destroy Drona. And then he also is so entranced and so impressed by the power of Arjuna that he would like to pay homage to this great warrior and to make an alliance with this great lawyer, so he also wishes to have a daughter that he can offer in marriage to Arjuna. So he goes off, and for a long period of time he does tapasya, and finally he gets the rishis to perform for him a great fire sacrifice. And in the middle of this sacrifice, they invoke the power of the infinite. And out of the fire comes his son, whose name is called Drishtadyumna. Drishtadyumna, which means extreme, the calm inner light. And he's the offspring of extreme dispassion. Drupada means extreme dispassion, disinclination for the things of this world. And the offspring of that, born out of the inner light, is this out of the inner fire of devotion and dedication, is the calm inner light. And the calm inner light has the power to obliterate your samskaras and to break your past habits. So this son is born to defeat the force of the past. This calm inner light will be able to do that. So Drishtadyumna is born with the one purpose out of the sacrificial fire of vanquishing Drona when the battle day finally comes. And also out of this fire is born a daughter, and her name is Drupadi. And Drupadi is the power of the kundalini, the power of feeling, the power of spiritual energy. And this daughter is born to marry Arjuna. So now Drupada has set in motion all these other forces that will eventually bear fruit at the time of the Great War. Okay, and also, of course, you know, this calm, extreme dispassion anchored in tapasya and spiritual practice gives rise to the kundalini. So again, the other offspring is the expression of kundalini is the result of Drupada's self-discipline. So it's factual for the story, and it's also symbolic. Now, meanwhile, back in Hastinapura, Duryodhana is quite distressed because once again he's been humiliated by the Pandavas. And once again the people are praising the Pandavas for their great powers. Even four of them accomplished what Duryodhana and all his brothers could not accomplish. Plus, the Pandavas are very popular. They're beautiful, they're kind, they radiate great spiritual energy, and naturally the people are very much attracted to him. And Yudhishthira is the oldest, and Dhritarashtra realizes that there's, even though he doesn't like it, you know, it's only appropriate that certain that he honor them and recognize them for the truth of who they are. And also Dhritarashtra has to say to Duryodhana, you know, I'm but a blind king. I am king in name only. The one who really conquered and created this kingdom was my brother Pandu, who is the father of the Pandavas. And Yudhishthira is the oldest son, and it's only right that he should have a place in this kingdom. I simply cannot cut him out. So they decide that they have to crown Yudhishthira Yuvraj, which is they declare him the heir. And Duryodhana hates every bit of it and is just furious, but nonetheless they have to sort of put on a face about unity, and because it's not seemly to be arguing among the cousins, and they have to pretend to be happy about this. But Duryodhana becomes more and more obsessed with the humiliation of having to live under the Pandavas. And every day he goes to his father and he complains about the oppression of the Pandavas and how they're going to be beggars in their own home. And he projects upon the Pandavas all his own faults, which is what the materialistic side of our nature tends to do about the spiritual side. We imagine that it's going to ruin us, that it's going to hurt us, that it's not going to be kind to us, that we're not going to have anything we want. And finally Duryodhana persuades his father. He says, look, if we can just get rid of them for a year, he said, I will be able to exert my charm on the people. I will be able to become so popular that when the Pandavas come back, no one will really be interested in them anymore. So he begs his father to send them away. And finally his father agrees that perhaps it's a good plan. But Dhritarashtra is afraid that while they're away, Duryodhana will hatch some harebrained scheme like he did with tying up Bhima, that will just bring dishonor on their house and will be ineffective. So Dhritarashtra decides that it's up to him, that in order to save his son from this great humiliation, and even Duryodhana has persuaded him that the Pandavas present a great threat to him, even though they've always been respectful. Now, this is not untrue, because the material desire and the ignorance of the mind is profoundly threatened by spirituality. And even though spirituality may offer to coexist, material desire knows that spiritual aspiration will eventually obliterate it. And it will never get to enjoy itself if the kingdom is ruled by the higher consciousness. So Yudhishthira is trying to compromise. Oftentimes the devotee in the early stages thinks it can compromise, thinks it can have a little bit of both. But the other side, the materialistic side, actually knows how strong the threat is, and that's why it puts up such a big fight. So Dhritarashtra hatches this plot, and he decides that he's going to send them off to this city called Varnavata, which is just another place. And he invites Yudhishthira in and the Pandava brothers, and he tells them what a beautiful city it is. Wouldn't it be wonderful to go there and visit for a while? And we're having a great palace built there for you, and our citizens in that city would be so pleased. And the Pandavas know that there's something fishy going on here. But Yudhishthira has resolved not to create disharmony, but to try in every way to cooperate and thus to avert the calamity of having to have a showdown with his own family. So they go to this city, and while they're on their way to this city, while they're leaving Hastinapura, and the citizens are very distressed about their going because they're not sure. They sense that there's something uneasy. But Yudhishthira and the Pandavas act as if this is all just a happy holiday. And Vidura, who's privy to the counsel of both sides, goes up to Yudhishthira, and he speaks to him in a very unusual dialect, which becomes a code between them. And he speaks to them about all the possible ways in which life can be taken. And Kunti, his mother who's walking with him, says later, what did he talk about? He said, well, he warned me about poison and about fire. He said, but Vidura thinks that it's going to be fire. And Vidura talked about how you protect yourself, how even animals burrow into the ground, and then even when a fire rages above ground, they're safe underneath the ground. So they arrive in this new city, and they see this beautiful palace. But privately, they walk around and they observe. It's a beautiful house built with a moat around it. But they observe that there's something very strange about this house. And they realize that it's been built of very flammable materials. They call it it's all wax and wood and has a sort of an odd smell to it. And this agent of Dhritarashtra's is there sort of looking out for them. Puruchana is his name. But they decide that they'll bide their time. And so a man appears after a time saying he's sent by Vidura, and he speaks to Yudhisthira from the same dialect, and then Yudhisthira knows that he's been sent and he can be trusted. And it turns out that he's a mining engineer. And he begins the project of creating a tunnel that they tunnel out from under the palace way out into the forest, and very surreptitiously, because Purochana, Dhritarashtra's agent, is around. They know there's spies around, and they very surreptitiously, this miner begins to dig this big tunnel out from under the house, out under the house and out into the forest. And Yudhisthira and his brother spend a lot of time hunting in the woods and riding and exploring because they want to get a strong sense of what the land is like. And almost a year passes.